fixing guests, for an online recording of today's show, or to subscribe to WGTD's weekly electronic newsletter, log on to our website, WGTD.org. Your gateway to public radio is WGTD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
Good morning, and welcome to the three-time award-winning WGTD Radio Theater. Today, the 91.1 Players will bring you the world premiere of Mycroft and Sherlock, the Holmes Brothers' Lake Geneva Mystery. This original story is written by Stephen Brown and Michael Alstrup and is based on some of the characters created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Starring as young Sherlock Holmes is Bobby Pertle, and as young Mycroft Holmes as Nathan Fassbinder, who is making his acting debut as a member of the 91.1 Players. Our director for today's performance is Don Jensen. We are very proud to tell you that support for the WGTD Radio Theater comes from the Westosha Veterinary Hospital, located on Highway 50 in Salem, the Kenosha Law Firm of O'Connor, Dumay, Aaliyah, and McTernan, and the Agape Chiropractic Clinic located in Lake Villa, Illinois. And now, let's get to our story this morning. Now, once again, it's time to keep our weekly appointment with our good friend and co-host, Dr. John Watson. Good evening, Dr. Watson.
Thank you, Mr. Barton. Will you join me in a spot of Earl Grey tea on this beautiful and sunny Saturday morning?
Oh, that sounds quite delightful, Dr. Watson. Thank you.
As I gaze out majestically at Geneva Lake, it brings back fond memories of my days working with Mr. Holmes in England, especially in the southern lake region near Grasmere. Sugar and cream as usual, Mr. Bartell?
Thank you. But back to our story, perhaps, Dr. Watson.
Indeed we shall, Mr. Bartell. Now, where was I?
I believe you were about to get us into our story today.
Yes, of course I was. In fact, I was just about to talk about Mycroft Holmes.
You know, Dr. Watson, I sometimes forget that Sherlock even had a brother.
By all means he does. Mycroft was 7 years older than Sherlock, but the difference between them was quite amazing.
What do you mean, Dr. Watson?
Well, while Holmes was lean and totally consumed with a burning energy that never ceased, his older brother, Mycroft, was fat and lazy as he got older.
Did that surprise you?
No, not at all. And yet, Holmes has always told me that Mycroft was his superior in powers of observation and deduction. I so clearly remember Holmes telling me about his older brother. He was just sitting in his chair at 221B Baker Street.
Now, Watson, 221 Baker Street. We have spent many years at this address in London, England, under the rent of Mrs. Hudson. Oh, characters of every type have frequented the rooms for help and assistance, calling upon us in those mysteries that only the finest criminal detectives could unravel.
We should get back to the story at hand, Holmes.
Yes, but before we do that, Watson, I must tell you how Mycroft...
Your brother? 7 years your senior?
Yes, of course he is. Mycroft always tells me how pleasant it was for him to find himself once more in the untidy room of the first floor in Baker Street, which has been the starting point of so many remarkable adventures. He often looked around him at the scientific charts upon the wall, and the acid-scarred bench of chemicals, the violin case leaning in the corner, the coal scuttle, which contained of old the pipes and tobacco.
Since we are still talking about Mycroft, much to the chagrin of Mr. Bartell, who would be most appreciative if we returned to Lake Geneva? Tell me one thing, Holmes.
You want me to tell you more about Mycroft?
I have not really thought much about that.
Oh, he is very well known in his own circle.
Where then?
Well, in the Diogenes Club, for example.
I had never heard of the institution.
Now, Mycroft, I haven't seen you for ages.
Yes, let me tell Watson and our listeners all about the Diogenes Club.
Please do.
It is described as a place where men can go to read without any distractions, and as such, the number one rule is that there is no talking, to the point where club members can be excluded for coughing. I am always there from 4:45 to 7:40 every evening.
The club was created as a front for the British Secret Service. This will be the same club that will find its way to Lake Geneva. The club itself is revealed to be supreme and the indispensable brain trust behind the British government, who pieces together the collective government secrets and then advises the best course of action.
Yes, and given that I am established both as a co-founder of the club and somewhat of a lazy sort, I almost exclusively travel only between my home and the club.
And finally, Mycroft occasionally says he is the British government, the most indispensable man in the country. He apparently serves as a sort of human computer way before its time.
Mycroft has always been a very modest person. He dares not to speak too much about himself, but rather, he likes to focus on other people. A true student of studying other people.
Very true, Watson. My position has always been unique.
Dear brother, you have always had the tidiest and most orderly of minds, with the greatest capacity for storing facts of any man living.
I truly do not know what this has to do with our story, but I am certain you will inform me of such metaphysical or purposes of refined deduction and reasoning.
I understand, Holmes, that the analytical conclusions and internal machinations of the British government are all passed on to Mycroft.
Ah, yes, the same powers which I have turned to the detection of crime he uses for his work for the Secret Service. He is the central clearinghouse for all those tidbits of espionage.
Speaking of time, Dr. Watson, I see that you have the old black tin dispatch box out again. I deduce that you were going over your notes for today's mystery as we gave our listeners some background about the two brothers. And we'll hear more from them a bit later.
Elementary, my dear boy. Among the records I came across was some of the most cases I had almost forgotten.
Interesting, Dr. Watson. Tell me more about today's case.
Now look at this. It says, upon arriving back at Baker Street, however, something odd happens. Holmes and I hear a voice say, "Good night, Mr. Sherlock Holmes." Holmes recognizes the voice but cannot place it. If he could, he would deduce what it all meant. But I'll share more of that story, which I have called A Scandal in Bohemia, at a later time. And now on to Lake Geneva.
Doctor, how did you and the two young brothers end up in Lake Geneva?
Captain Robert Holmes, the boy's father, had recently brought to a successful conclusion a special assignment he had had with the British Home Office. And we decided a few days' rest in nearby Conforth would do us good
before returning to our arduous life on Baker Street. We were staying in a small but comfortable inn. Only on the morning of the third day, I remember Sherlock, Mycroft, and I were waiting in the morning dining room for those absolute essentials without which three young country gentlemen could not start their day. An early morning cup of tea, along with a scone with butter and jam. As the three of us sat near the open window, the nearby church bell was tolling a funeral knell.
Those church bells are quite ominous. Wouldn't you agree with me, Mycroft?
They could be, but if you listen carefully to the cadence of the bells, you hear what I mean? Very interesting.
I don't hear any difference at all.
Watson, you have never been the most observant. I would hate to think what your powers of deduction will be like in 40 years.
Or tomorrow.
I deduce, Sherlock, that I'll be a very successful doctor who would never have to need to use both your and Mycroft's innate detective powers of deducing and inducing.
I can hear several different tempos. In particular, the most dominant one is the 3-2-2-3-2 Macedonian meter.
I do agree with you, Mycroft, but I dare say that you have possibly missed the metric modulation between the third and fourth septuplets.
All I hear are bells, lots of bells clanging in my ears.
Watson, I do believe you are right.
About the bells?
No, that you will make a good doctor, who will be a dedicated and sincere physician.
No, I disagree.
About Watson, dear boy?
The bells, the meter, the tempo. If one wanted to speed up the triplets slightly, the next available notch up yields a not-so-subtle difference of a 16th note.
That is quite precise, dear brother.
I need another cup of tea, and then...
Wait, Watson. He's not finished.
How do you know?
Wait. 3, 2, 1...
A tempo marking denotes not only the frequency of a reference tactus, but also the durations of its subdivisions, a set of discrete values. That's the difference.
As the boys prepare for a midsummer day of hiking in southeast Wisconsin, Captain Holmes is getting ready for a meeting with a local constabulary about an ongoing investigation.
Mycroft, I must go to a very important meeting for a while. I should be back by dinner.
On a case?
Yes. I'll be with the Walworth County Investigators Alliance.
Okay, Father. I'll make sure the younger boys don't get into too much trouble.
I will see you at dinner tonight.
Okay, Father.
As Captain Holmes walks towards his car, the boys decide that it's time to get rolling, which means no more hanging out at the cottage and heading out towards Holly Point, which is about a mile away from Lake Geneva. But just as they're ready to leave, their friend Chet Morton is running up the path leading to the front cottage, and he is definitely looking stressed out and his face is beet red.
Hey, look, there's Chet. He looks upset. Hi, Chet. What's wrong, fella?
I'm in deep trouble.
What's wrong?
Did you see anyone driving by here in the Diamond?
What's the Diamond?
That's Chet's old jalopy. His Oldsmobile.
Yes, your big four-door cherry red automobile.
It's been stolen. Diamond's been copped.
Copped?
Watson, he means stolen. Filched.
I went out to my garage at home, and she was gone.
Wasn't the Diamond locked?
That's the strange part of it. She was locked, though the garage door was open. I can't see how anyone got away with it.
Sounds like a professional job to me. Maybe a theft ring from across the border in Illinois was involved.
I don't think so, Watson. That's not their M.O.
What do you mean?
What my younger brother means, Watson, is that it had to be a local who grabbed the Diamond.
How could you know that?
Because the tire tracks indicate that the car was driven from the garage and driven to one of our back roads.
But...
How did I know? Let me tell you, the tire tracks head out towards the southeast, which means...
Which means, Chet, that the thief had to drive towards the south side of the lake, on the way to Walworth.
I'm just confused that someone would actually steal a cherry red car, especially when everyone in Lake Geneva knows the Diamond Lady.
Why does that confuse you, Chet? It seems perfectly logical to me.
Most cars that are stolen are of standard make and are simple in color. That makes them easier to sell.
And your cherry red lady, as you call it, would never be in a stable of hotly sought-after automobiles. Never.
You are so right, Watson. So right.
As the boys continue to sort out all of the possible permutations of just how the thievery of the Diamond was carried out, and where she is now, the boy who would grow up and take on the title of Professor was plotting one of his most insidious crimes. His predilection for evil begins here, upon this day, and commencing at this very second in time. James Moriarty. At age 16, already a mathematical genius, and someone who was always in Holmes' thoughts, both of the Holmes, Mycroft and Sherlock.
I have pondered, often, just who Moriarty is. I know he has an intellect equal or greater than that of my own, but not you, Mycroft.
This is correct. That's why you are my younger brother. I know what Moriarty is really up to.
Mycroft has that remarkable ability to see beyond the obvious, something with which I have the most difficulty.
James Moriarty. He knows what's happening at all times. It's like a game of three-dimensional chess. Professor Moriarty, or should I say young Moriarty, not only knows where every bloody piece is on the chessboard, he can incredibly anticipate his opponent's move 3, 4, even 5 moves away. After observing what's been going on in Lake Geneva with this story so far, he is remarking solely to himself.
This is one thing for sure. The Holmes brothers will never know what beckoned their doorsteps. I will someday become their arch nemesis. For now, I'll make my multiple chess moves with dexterity. They will never know from where I come or what I do. This little mystery they are conjuring up will be like the play of children. They will rue the day they betrayed me.
I do believe, Mycroft, that we shall never encounter another man like Moriarty. And one day, we will truly be able to call him the very genius of evil, who shall one day merely be called Professor Moriarty.
I dare say, Sherlock, that Moriarty will elude even the most accomplished member of the constabulary. He will become the most dangerous and evil criminal ever known.
Hey, where are you guys? There you are.
Good afternoon, Chet. What's new with your car? What kept you so long? We thought you'd be over here earlier.
I just finished lunch. I ate 2 burgers and a double order of french fries over at Hardee's.
It figures. 2 burgers. Your appetite's the only thing that comes before trying to find the diamond.
My dad said that if I'm not oversleeping, I must be eating. Anyway, Mr. Dugan said we could borrow his pickup truck to head back out to Lakeport Road.
I wonder why Constable James is heading over here.
Maybe we should let him tell us.
Afternoon, boys.
Constable James, how are things with the Lake Geneva Police Force today?
Yeah, well, things could be better, Chet. And how was your lunch at Hardee's?
How'd you know that?
Well, I stopped by for lunch just after you left. Clayton said you had been in. Anyway, I need to ask you boys something.
Is it about my car?
The diamond?
Yeah.
Nope. No reports have come in on your car yet. It's about a robbery up at the Stone Manor Mansion, up on Lakeport Road, just down the road from the high school.
When did that happen, Sheriff?
Well, I'd say it was about...
It was late last night. I do believe it was just before midnight. Right, Constable?
Why, yes, that is correct, Mycroft.
Mycroft, how could you have known that?
Hold on, here it comes.
It's quite elementary, Chet.
See, I told you.
You see, Constable James had a late lunch today, after Chet left Hardee's, which meant it had to be after 2 o'clock. Therefore,
the sheriff, or the constable, was out late last night investigating the robbery. And if you look over at the tires on the squad car over there, there's still mud on them, and it splashed up on the sides.
That's because, Chet, it rained last night at about 11:30.
Spot on, Watson.
Well, there have been some strange things going on lately at Stone Manor.
That used to be called Youngland's Mansion, right?
Yes, that's right.
I do believe that Otto Young from Chicago had the mansion constructed for over $1 million.
And it had things like gold-plated fixtures, a bowling alley in the basement, and a third-floor miniature golf course. What was robbed, Constable?
Well, I probably shouldn't tell you.
Come on, tell us.
Okay, but promise you won't tell anyone else. But it seems that the government had some valuable papers locked away in a bank vault in the lower basement. And some highly classified electronic equipment.
So, let me see if I understand this. Only papers were stolen, and not the gold fixtures or any of the expensive silverware and the Picasso paintings? Am I right?
Yep, you are 100% correct, Mycroft.
Is that why my dad was working with you? Because of the government papers and the electronics?
Yes, Sherlock. That's why I'm working on the case. The British government secret service, MI6, also has an interest in this caper.
Dad, I didn't even see you drive up.
I didn't drive up. I walked.
Captain Holmes, did you get the message I sent you earlier?
Yes, I did. Very odd turn of events. Mm.
Because of all those antiques.
Somehow, I don't think that's what you meant. Correct?
That's quite true.
Captain, why do you think the robber did not take anything of major value?
Robbers. Plural.
rob birds?
Yes, more than one.
Watson, it seems that it would have to take at least two robbers because of the elaborate home security system installed at the mansion. Quite intricate.
Watson, you mentioned something about nothing of value. You can't have been further from the truth.
The paper, sir? More than just paper?
Yes, much more.
You said MI6. Might those papers deal with the national security of the United Kingdom?
And most likely the United States as well?
Father, what do you know that we do not know about this matter?
Son, the total tonnage of what I know that you don't could stop a thundering herd of oxen dead in their tracks.
Obviously, Captain Holmes not only knows more than the boys do, but he gets his daily reports from the Office of Secret Service in London. He gets wires at all times of the day and night, 7 days a week. But right now, Captain Holmes has just received word about Mr. Robinson's pending arrest. He just found out and is saying to Mycroft...
So that's all I know at this point, about Mr. Robinson, that is.
Slim's father? Is he in big trouble?
Well, I think Constable James is the best to answer that.
Constable?
Actually, Sherlock, I can tell you this. Mr. Robinson is one of our primary persons of interest.
I guess that's why Slim looked sort of down earlier.
Yeah, I saw Slim this morning and asked him if he knew anything about the robbery.
What did he say?
Well, I really can't say.
What the good sheriff is not telling us, Sherlock, is that Mr. Robinson was at the mansion before the robbery.
And how did you know that?
That's very easy to answer, Constable.
It's always easy for Mycroft.
Not always easy, Watson. But this time I can answer that question with this. This poster tells it all. It says, the above reward of $500 will be paid for information leading to the arrest of the person or persons who broke into the Stone Manor mansion and stole jewels, money, securities, and other small office supplies and equipment.
There's nothing on that poster that mentions Slim's dad.
There's no need to do so.
And why not?
Because Mr. Robinson was seen driving a car on the south side of Lake Geneva at about the same time of the robbery. And he
but,
also...
But, as the constable knows, Mr. Robinson could not have been at Stone Manor. Am I right, Constable?
Before Mr. James answers that question, I do have a pertinent question to ask.
And what is that, Watson?
Is it Constable James or is it Sheriff James? I've heard both titles mentioned today.
I am glad you asked that, Watson.
Watson, I thought you were going to ask me about some old book with Alan Hartley's name in it.
No, of course. That's not what he meant. It's from another story called Time and Time Again.
Alas, I think it's time to answer the real question. Actually, Watson, Constable and Sheriff are both correct.
Which do you prefer, Mr. James?
Well, if I could make such a choice, I do like Constable better.
Watson, I think your question was more impertinent than pertinent about the Constable.
It's okay, Mycroft. I was also getting a bit confused, but I do know what's going on in our mystery today.
And now that we've solved just how to address the constable, Mr. James, the devious and quite evil Moriarty is continuing one of his most insidious crimes, and doing so at his very young age.
As you can see, Martha, I have only the best intentions for the Holmes brothers. I will do nothing to dishonor my entire chain of ancestors of Moriartys, and well into the future.
Of course not. You would never do such a thing. But have the Holmes ever said anything bad against you?
Not that I can remember.
There's nothing at all?
I would imagine that Mycroft might accuse me of committing a most heinous crime, and then Sherlock is positively disappointed when he discovers the two brothers are mistaken.
Why would they ever think such an outrageous thing?
I'm not the monstrous master criminal they make me out to be, nor will I ever be.
I've never heard you talk about your family, or your own earlier life. Why is that?
I'd rather talk about other people, and not myself.
Please tell me more.
I come from a Roman Catholic family in Ireland, and I would think that because of my interest in science and mathematics, my family would have quickly determined that I would be a natural candidate for priesthood.
Have you ever given thought about that?
Dear me, such a storm, Martha. I do hope the Stone Mansion is safe and sound from such a harsh Wisconsin storm.
Have you ever been there before?
Yes, but long ago. I think a year or so ago.
Why were you at the Stone Mansion?
It must be mathematics.
Mathematics? What do you mean?
Pascal's triangle gives all the binomial coefficients up to a given degree, but this method does not give a general formula, and to obtain the unknown, be necessary to calculate most of the coefficients up to degree 99.
James Moriarty, what are you talking about? You look so strange.
Hold on, Martha. Stay right where you are.
I will not move, but what are you doing?
Wait, yes, here it is.
Tell me, what has you so agitated?
Let me read this to you. It's something I wrote one day after having this exact dream 3 nights in a row.
What is it?
I must read this to you now. Holmes, many years from now, would say about me, I perceive the somewhat sinister figure of the late Professor Moriarty standing upon the narrow pathway which led to safety. I walked along the pathway, Moriarty still at my heels. When I reached the end, I stood at bay. He drew no weapons. He rushed at me and threw his long arms around me on the brink of the falls.
I don't understand.
It's like I'm experiencing it all over again.
What happened next?
I slipped through the air, and I clawed the air with both hands. But for all his efforts, I couldn't get my balance, and over I went. I'm falling, faster, through the air, rolling over and over. Then it's all over. I slam against the rocks and sink into the water below, sing my air bubbles above my head. I sink deeper and deeper.
Young Moriarty has just scared the bejeebers out of Martha. She is still trying to catch her breath as Moriarty has his head bowed, cradled in his two hands, and if we could see his face, we'd see that he has a devilish grin, one that would make even the strongest person's blood curdle. As Martha tries to regain her composure, this would be a good time to focus in on just what was stolen from Stone Mansion. Once again, let's hear from the adult Holmes brothers and Dr. Watson. Not that our more youthful characters couldn't handle this.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bartell, for making sure our audience does not get too confused. Now, let's take stock of what's happened so far. Chet Morton's fine cherry red automobile has been stolen.
Yes, indeed. The diamond, as he calls it. I have never understood just why Americans love to provide a name for their vehicles.
Watson, that is their way. Quite endearing. In the meantime, the diamond is gone, and a massive and potentially catastrophic robbery at the Stone Mansion could have enormous consequences on the security and welfare of the entire world.
I do believe, Mycroft, that you are in your element to call it full regalia when it comes to protecting the crown. As well as the colonies.
You mean America?
Yes, of course. I also extremely dislike altering my habits, but the powers that would be would not have it any other way. It is most awkward that I should be away from my office. But this was a real crisis. I have never seen the Prime Minister so upset.
Or the President. I also understand that Congress is buzzing like an overturned beehive.
Thank you, Dr. Watson. It certainly sounds like you and the Holmes brothers were on top of this curiously mysterious story. Let's find out more about what was stolen and why.
Let me lay out the inventory for you, Mr. Bartell.
Please do, Sherlock.
All of my deductive reasoning talents raise strong signals to me that a set of top-secret plans was stolen from the mansion, that it contained a submarine carrier configuration designated AN-1, and it would carry 8 high-performance aircraft in 2 large hangars built into the forward hull.
You are trying to tell me these were plans to build a submarine that was more like an aircraft carrier?
Watson, that's exactly what my brother means.
Of course that's what I mean.
Are you trying to tell me that there could be some submarine running at the bottom of Lake Geneva?
Hey guys, you'll never guess what I saw today.
Chet, where have you been? Your face is all red.
And your hair looks different.
I was out on the lake this morning, helping out the mailboat. There was lots of wind out there.
So what did you see?
There was nothing out of place, or stuff that looked weird. All pretty normal to me.
Does that include over at Stone Mansion?
It's all very quiet there.
What about in the house itself?
There too. No lights were on, and no one was inside.
I see. Very interesting, Chet. By the way, did you talk to Joshua Logan, the captain of the mailboat?
Yes, of course. I did. Why do you ask?
I was wondering how his son Jeffrey is feeling. He's been suffering with chicken pox.
Captain Wilgett said Jeff is feeling much better.
That's good to hear.
Well, I got a scoop. See you later.
You can count on that, Chet. Absolutely.
Did you ever get the inventory of everything that was stolen from the mansion?
Watson, I have the whole list, right here.
Mycroft, you have that list set to memory, don't you?
Of course I do.
Don't keep us in the dark, Holmes.
Let's sit down and see what we have.
What the heck? Look at that!
It's a photograph of the submarine that can launch jet airplanes.
You bet it is. And it says that it could launch 4 VTOL aircraft within 5.5 minutes of surfacing, and 8 aircraft in just over 9 minutes.
VTOL?
Vertical Takeoff Launcher. Straight up. No need to surface.
This document says that under even the most adverse sea conditions, the time to launch all 8 aircraft would be 18 minutes. To compensate for the adverse conditions, the ground crew would move the aircraft via deck tracks to the midship launchers closest to the ship's center of buoyancy.
Fascinating. So that's how they plan to do it.
Do what?
Watson, by setting the launch codes to the VTOL mode, they could do a snap count and create such havoc.
They?
Yes, they. They will do whatever they can to destroy our way of life. You can count on that.
Holmes, says they. He should be saying Moriarty. I will control that submarine and will never let it get into their hands. They will never discover where the real plans are, or who I am. Never.
As Moriarty plans to control one of the most powerful submarines in the entire world, and perhaps all of the military powers on the planet, Sherlock and Mycroft are back at Stone Mansion, getting ready to solve the mystery and begin yet another one. And now, let's get back to our story, the Lake Geneva mystery.
Yes, Father. They may want to destroy our way of life, but I know just what is going on here.
Yes, Mycroft. I see where you are heading here. Watson, could you be so kind as to call the local constable to meet us at the mailboat dock?
I'm not sure I follow you, Holmes.
Just make the call, my man. I'll explain on the way. Let's take my car.
Why are we stopping here at the boathouse and not the mailboat itself?
Because, my dear friend, everything we are looking for is in the boathouse. The boat itself was just a slip of the tongue. Let's go in.
By all means. Hurry.
Is the door locked?
No, and I wasn't expecting it to be either.
Doesn't seem to be anything too odd here, as we are in season now.
Nothing too odd, except for that tarp over there covering something or other. Sherlock, are you thinking what I'm thinking?
Of course.
Let's take this tarp off and confirm what we suspect.
By all means.
Why, it's Chet's car, the Diamond.
The constable, I presume.
Boys, what is going on here? Why, it's the Diamond. The thief hid it here? I would have never thought this to be a local job.
Oh, it was a local job, all right, but not a theft.
So right you are, dear brother. Let's see what we find in the old girl.
Find? Isn't it enough that we found the car?
Oh, there's more to this mystery than a so-called car theft. Really, Watson, you must learn to continue an investigation, to completion, to unearth all the facts and not just the obvious ones.
Yes, my friend. Unless one does that, one will never find everything there is to find and may actually come to incorrect conclusions.
I see nothing at all in the boot. Looks brand new, as though nothing has ever been in there. Of course, Chet has always been the meticulous type.
Yes, so he has been. But something doesn't quite make sense back here. Oldsmobile has never configured the boot, or rather the trunk, as the colonials call it, quite in this fashion. There doesn't seem to be as much room in here as there should be.
Looks normal to me.
Oh, but you are so right, dear brother. Look here. You see? Someone built a special compartment back here.
Well, I'll be.
And look what's hidden in there. Some papers.
What are you all doing here?
Well, young man, I could ask you the same question.
Oh, I think I know what Chet is here for. Don't we, my dear Chet?
I have no idea what you're talking about. I was down at the mailboat, and I saw all the cars here. I thought I'd see what was going on here.
Well, why don't we see what these papers are? Yes. The configuration for the secret submarine.
The submarine plans. How can that be? And why would they be here in Lake Geneva, of all places?
Honestly, Watson, how can you be so dense? Aren't you aware of the shipbuilding yards in Manitowoc, Marinette, and Sturgeon Bay?
Why, yes. Who isn't? But they've never built submarines. Only naval crafts and pleasure ships.
Yes. The public line. Again, Watson, you must be complete in your analysis.
Man, I'm not following you guys at all.
Well, first of all, some of the major parts of the special submarine are to be built here in the Midwest and shipped east for final assembly. Some of the testing is to be done here.
Here? In Lake Geneva?
Why not? Who would ever suspect?
Well, that's for sure, but what does Chet have to do with all of this?
Chet? Now, Chet, what was it that you have to do with any of this?
Why, wouldn't you all like to know?
He's getting away.
Drat, he's blocked it from the outside.
There, it's open.
But we're too late. He's gone. Nowhere in sight.
Not surprising. Moriarty has always been deceptively quick.
Moriarty?
Why, of course, my dear Watson. Who else could be so diabolical?
But how did you know?
Not that I would ever speak for my brother, but I knew as soon as I saw the inside of the car. Only Moriarty could have been so clever as to rebuild the inside of the boot to hide those papers.
Oh, my dear brother, I knew well before that. When Chet replied that the boat captain's son was feeling better from the chicken pox, I knew he was making up the truth, because the captain's son had been suffering from nothing more than poison ivy. Chet may have been here at the time, but never took that boat ride. Look at this day, not any breeze at all. He couldn't have become windburn. He was in the vicinity all right, but struggling to get that tarp over the car. It took all three of us to get that tarp off the car, and he was winded from struggling with it all by himself. He was red in the face and winded from hiding his crime and nothing more.
So, he faked the car theft.
Isn't that obvious, Constable?
Well, I just wanted to be sure.
And so you are. And here are those papers, Constable. I'm sure you are capable of getting them to the right authorities.
Yeah, well, I'll call the federal authorities right away, and I'll check with you boys later. Bye-bye now.
Well, boys, should we try and enjoy the rest of our holiday?
Yes, by all means.
This has been The New Adventures of Young Mycroft and Sherlock, the Holmes Brothers' Lake Geneva Mystery, here on the award-winning WGTD Radio Theater. This original story was written and created by Stephen Brown and Michael Alstrup. The director of today's mystery was Don Jensen, an original member of the award-winning 91.1 Players. Our stars today were
Bobby Pertle as young Sherlock,
Nathan Fassbinder as young Mycroft Holmes,
Evan Zolke as young John Watson,
Ike Check as the evil James Moriarty and Chet Morton,
Courtney Zapp as Martha Hudson,
Cameron Spencer as Dr. John Hamish Watson,
Tom Powers as Mycroft Holmes and Constable James.
Don Jensen as Sherlock Holmes.
Terry Lawler as Captain Robert Holmes.
And I'm Byron Huestins, your host and narrator for this morning's show. We are very proud to tell you that the support for the WGTD Radio Theater comes from the Westosha Veterinary Hospital, located on Highway 50 in Salem, the Kenosha Law Firm of O'Connor, Dumay, Aaliyah, and McTernan, and the Agape Chiropractic Clinic, located in Lake Geneva, Lake Villa, Illinois. Be sure to join us on August 16th at 11:15 for the new adventures of Ozzie and Harriet. Be sure to join Ozzie, Harriet, David, and Ricky, the Nelsons, right here on the WGTD Radio Theater. Once again, thank you so much for joining us today for the world premiere of Young Mycroft and Sherlock, the Holmes Brothers' Lake Geneva mystery, written and created by Stephen Brown and Michael Alstrup. For the WGTD Radio Theater and the 91.1 Players, I'm Byron Huestins. Thank you.
Thomas Coltrane. The journey begins at 7 right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Now the latest news from National Public Radio.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Bush is urging the Democratic-led Congress to approve offshore oil and gas drilling as a solution to the country's rising gas prices. But Democratic Congressman Nick Rahal of West Virginia says the plan is a bad idea for the environment and would bring American consumers little to no relief.
Our legislation would compel the industry to drill on those public lands it already controls. They would either have to produce from these lands, show they are being diligent in their development, or give up the right to control even more federal energy resources.
Rahal delivering his party's radio address. Many of the world's major oil industry players are gearing up for a crucial summit in Riyadh tomorrow. Saudi Arabia summoned fellow OPEC members and large oil firm executives after an unprecedented rally in oil prices earlier this month. The head of the International Atomic Energy Agency has called on Damascus to show transparency and cooperate with the agency's inspectors ahead of their visit to Syria tomorrow. Dale Gablack reports.
Nuclear watchdog chief Mohammed El-Baradei said he hopes Syria will let IAEA inspectors visit locations suspected of having reactors. He said the inspectors want to go with open eyes and observe the facts. In return, El-Baradei said he hopes Syria will show absolute transparency and would assist the investigators. Earlier this month, Syria said it would not allow the IAEA to probe beyond a site bombed by Israel last September, despite the agency's expressed desire to visit three other suspect locations. The visit marks the start of an international fact check of U.S. and Israeli claims that Syria tried to build a secret plutonium-producing facility. For NPR News, I'm Dale Gavlak in Amman, Jordan.
At least five NATO soldiers were killed by roadside bombs in Afghanistan today. The military alliance does not typically disclose the nationalities of fallen troops. NPR's Ivan Watson has more.
NATO says one foreign soldier was killed and three more wounded when their pre-dawn patrol hit a roadside bomb in Afghanistan's eastern Paktika province. Meanwhile, to the south, four foreign soldiers were killed and two more seriously wounded by another roadside bomb in Afghanistan's turbulent Helmand province. The U.S. Army is deployed in Paktika, while more than 7,000 British soldiers, bolstered by 1,500 U.S. Marines, are stationed in Helmand. Taliban insurgents are waging a bloody war of attrition against the Afghan government and its Western allies, using suicide bombs and landmines. NATO retaliates, often using warplanes and attack helicopters against the rebels. For the first time last month, NATO casualties in Afghanistan surpassed the month-long death toll for U.S.-led forces in Iraq. Ivan Watson, NPR News, Kabul.
This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, committed to helping Americans lead healthier lives and get the care they need, on the web at rwjf.org.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Classics by Request on Wisconsin Public Radio. This is our final hour together, and lots to hear between the afternoon when Stephanie Elkin steps in for more classical music in the afternoon. If you've sent an online request, I just get the feeling it's not working today, because usually I have lots of online requests on a Saturday morning, and at the moment I have zero. So during a long musical request, I went into the music library and tried it from my computer and sent myself a test, and it didn't work. It didn't come back, so I get the feeling there are a lot of you that are not going to get to hear your request today, and I'm sorry about that, but it has been wonderful talking to some new callers and to lots of listeners by phone, so that's always fun as well. We'll try to see if we can fix this during the week. By the way, I will not be here a week from today. Anders Yoakum is happy to help out and step in while I'll be in New York attending the National Origami Convention, as I do every year during the last weekend in June. Okay, with that announcement, let's continue now. Peggy in Hartford feels that June is the month for weddings, so in honor of all the brides, how about this work by Henry Purcell, the Trumpet Voluntary?
Thank you.
For the Brides in June, that was the trumpet voluntary of Henry Purcell, played by the ensemble Musica Variata. We'll stay in that mood for this next request. It's from Tim in Middleton, who dedicates his request to Bridget Emily. Music of George Gershwin, Love is Here to Stay.